G'day everyone, this is Tom Uren of Seriously Risky Business, and g'day Grok.
How are you doing, Tom?
I'm good. First of all, I'd like to thank our founding corporate sponsor Proofpoint and also the Hewlett Foundation Cyber Initiative for their support. Well, we thought today that we'd talk about whether cyber operations, cyber espionage is a different discipline from signals intelligence. And by extension, should there be a separate cyber intelligence organization, a separate SIGINT organization, a separate human organization, etc., etc.?
Yeah, this is a great question because in a way it was a defining question of the mid-1990s in the US of what do we do now that cyber is becoming a thing? We've got these two Cold War era spy agencies, well, 18 of them, but you know, these two big ones of NSA and CIA, and they, you know, one of them listens to radio and one of them like steals everything that isn't nailed down and brings a crowbar for the stuff that is.
Yep.
Who owns it?
One way we can look at this is just like at a purely technical level. And I think that they are different, right? You've got some elements that are very similar. But they're different things, right? Signals intelligence is just listening to radio waves, typically, and turning that into something you care about. And there's a lot of turning that into intelligence that you can use. And there's a lot of where do you go? How do you turn that signal into something intelligible? How do you understand it? How do you prioritize it? Yada, 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 yada. And cyber espionage, there's many elements that are the same, but fundamentally it comes down to understanding computers. Maybe fundamentally is the wrong word, but you need to understand computers and how to subvert them.
Right. And I think an important thing to bring up there is that there's some analytic crossover. Right? So understanding radio messages between two points might be similar to understanding emails between two points, you know, figuring out what they're talking about and so on. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are the same thing, right? That's what we're getting at, is that this analytic parallel stuff, that's fine, but the collection and how it's done and what can be done with it is very, very different.
Yep.
And so, you know, the big question is who should own that, right? We could take this at the sort of very broad philosophical level, which was incidentally how it was done in the 90s, when there was this discussion, if we can call it that, of who was going to own cyber. It wasn't done in terms of the like, well, we have the capacity and, you know, more skills and experience in this area, plus, you know, we already have this sort of capability, et cetera, et cetera. So it makes sense for us to own this. It wasn't done like that. Let me read you a direct quote.
Yeah. Before you do, let me just say, I think the argument that makes sense is basically what we said, that there's a lot of analytic overlap. And so it's much easier for a SIGINT organization to add a cyber espionage component than it is for a, by contrast, a human agency, say. But anyway, get your quote.
Okay. Getting back to this sort of philosophical distinction, which sort of predominated the discussion at the time, this is a quote from General Michael Hayden.
Yep, the former director of NSA.
Right. So it says, NSA's job was all about communications. Historically, that was electronic data in motion, global high-frequency communications, shorter-range microwave signals, photons, and electrons moving along a cable. Agencies like CIA handled other materials, human sources, purloined documents, pilfered code, more or less physical data sitting at rest. The division of labor was clear. Electronic data in motion, NSA. Physical data at rest, CIA. But the new digital domain had created a different state of nature. Electronic data at rest.
Well, what I think is really funny about that is, other than that initial part about communications, which I think our argument hangs off, that because you're dealing with communications, you've got analytic similarity. The rest of it is just kind of totally irrelevant. It's like rhetorically appealing, but it doesn't talk about complementary skills or building on skills that you already have or capabilities that you already have
he basically just came out and said NSA vibes with computers a lot better than CIA vibes with computers. You know, we stan computers, so we should have it.
Yep, yep.
But I also want to point out that within that philosophical bullshit, he also sneaks in some complete bullshit, right? So electronic was not a part of NSA's remit. Like, the fact that it was electronic was not a part of what defined something as being NSA's domain. So by tacking on electronic, he sort of predisposing the idea that anything that is electronic data belongs to NSA. You know, and normally it's been in motion, but here we have electronic data that's NSA's. It's just not in motion yet. So it should still be NSA's.
Mm.
So even though, as you pointed out, the argument is just, you know, vibes and feelings, he's still twisting it to be, he's framing it so that NSA comes out ahead.
Yeah, yeah. When you read that to me, I thought, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Despite the fact that, like, when you think about it, it doesn't.
Right. Okay. So here's one other quote from NSA. What they started putting out were these ideas of active SIGINT, where instead of just passively collecting and, you know, waiting for stuff to get sent to them, they would go out and they would capture it. And so after they defined this concept of active SIGINT, they went to their attorney and they said, who would have authority over active SIGINT as an activity? So the attorney looks at it and says, oh, the executive order 12333 clearly says that SIGINT is NSA and active SIGINT is a SIGINT. So yeah, that's NSA stuff. As we've said, there's analytic parallels, but I think one of the other things that's worth keeping in mind is all of that signals processing that they were doing took a lot of computers, like a lot of infrastructure. They already had huge amounts of just computer stuff.
Yep.
Right? Like the automatic translation stuff, you know, looking for keywords, sort of all of the stuff already existed. So adding computers like cyber to that just made a lot of sense because they had that capacity already. They could do most of what was needed. They just needed to get access to the computer or get access to, you know, the traffic, and then they could feed it into their existing infrastructure or use their existing skills to develop new infrastructure based on their experience and stuff, whereas CIA did not have that. So it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, when you were talking, I was thinking about cryptanalysis. So
exactly.
Breaking yeah. codes, and at least at some point, yeah. NSA used to be a leading computing power because it was using it mm-hmm. to break codes.
Yeah.
And you see that in cyber espionage today. There's occasionally... what's the word? Certificates, and there've been some clever stuff done with breaking those yeah. sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think while perhaps the means that NSA used to own cyber as their sort of operational area might have been a bit underhanded and aggressively sort of bureaucratic aggression or the bureaucratic knife fight of some sort. I mean, it does make sense. It makes more sense for them to have it than for CIA to have it, I think.
Yep.
Like, CIA should have that sort of capability when they need it. But in general, I mean, would CIA be running something that could monitor all of the internet and look at the traffic? Like, that's clearly an NSA thing. It's not CIA. So then why
yep.
would you start saying, like, targeted stuff should be CIA in a completely separate agency that has rivalry with this other one?
Yeah, yeah. So the example that I can think of is you want to enable some sort of humint with a particular operation and it's just very, very sensitive and you're worried about sharing uh-huh. it with anyone. I can understand the concern there. I'm not sure that it would be the right answer to spin up a totally separate functional group in CIA, but that's probably partly my background. And the counterexample, I guess, I don't know if we've mm-hmm. talked about this, but there's the story about the CIA's covert internet communication system was undone and a whole lot of agents discovered and arrested and some even executed, I believe.
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah, yeah, I think we did talk about it. And I think what we decided was it looked like they'd used humint practices and translated it into the cyber domain.
Exactly. And I think the thing I want to bring up here is that one of the reasons it's good to have the offense and defense team together, right, in the same place, is that they help each other, particularly with this sort of stuff with cyber, right? Because you need the offensive team to know the state of the art of the defensive side, particularly in the investigation and how correlations are done or attribution or any of the forensic stuff. Because if you have your guys doing the state-of-the-art stuff, they can inform your offensive guys. You can then make sure that what they're doing won't be caught out, right? And not having those two sides, not having the offense and defense together, means that the defense side won't know what sort of clever tricks to be looking for.
Yep.
And the offense side won't know what sort of clever tricks to try and avoid. And
the phrase that people I'm familiar with used to use was the poacher and the gamekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a very British thing nowadays.
Yeah. Right. And a historic example of why this is important is during the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks, prior to that, they'd had all of their own code stuff, their own enciphering, you know, the really basic book codes and so also. And when they took over, they destroyed the secret police. And so they never knew that the secret police had cracked their codes, right? So they never understood that their coding and their enciphering was broken. So when they were developing their intelligence agency, they didn't put points into cryptanalysis because they thought that they were pretty good at this already. The end result being that they did not know for quite a long time that cryptanalysis was a thing and codes could be broken.
Right, yeah.
And it wasn't until the 30s that they sort of started catching on to this. And so they were behind for huge periods of time because they never had exposure to that. And so that's the vibe I get from the CIA communications thing, right? Is that they've just never had exposure to how this gets broken. They're, you know, we do this in the physical world. It's really good. We're online.
Yep.
You know, it's worked everywhere. We can do it here. It seems to follow all of the correct rules of, you know, isolation and cover and all this other stuff. So that's perfect. And it's a sort of that lack of domain experience or expertise that sort of really gets them. And I think that's why, I guess what we're saying is like having one, just one agency focusing on these things is good.
Yeah. Well, that's also an argument to have the cyber defense and intelligence arms together, which occurs in all the Five Eyes. Like, I was thinking about other countries where it seems that they've got just totally different setups. So we've talked about Russia quite a bit. It seems that every one of their intelligence or the big intelligence organizations, the FSB does cyber operations, the SVR, the GRU. So it's kind of foreign intelligence, military intelligence, and domestic counterintelligence. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And I guess what I was thinking is that it's not obvious from where I sit that for them it's a huge problem, right? That those those organizations seem to have different characters, personalities perhaps is the right word.
Yes,
and we've talked about that in a previous episode, but but it doesn't seem like that's a major failing. What do you think?
Yeah, just very briefly on the character of organizations. How do you spot an extrovert at the NSA?
They look at your shoes rather than their own.
Yeah, so I think even though you're making a little bit of fun of the whole, like the vibes and the feels and the, you know, the cybers and stuff like that, which is also something that we care a huge amount about. I think we see here the Chinese and the Russians just have sort of different understandings of cyber, so that when they build their organizations to handle these things, they build different organizations because they're trying to match what they understand. So like one of the ways that I think it's useful to think about this is just realizing how fundamentally different understandings can be. So in Chinese, the word for knife and sword are the same because and spear as well, because it means a single edge blade. So depending on the size of the blade, that's what you determine whether it's a knife or a single edge sword or a huge blade on a pole. They're all the same word because it's a single edge blade that groups them together. And then there's another one for double edged, right? And so the idea of a double edged spear from a single edged spear is the core thing that defines them. Whereas for us, we would say, you know, a spear is a long pole arm with a pointy thing at the end. And it's different from a sword because a sword is not a long pole arm with,
yep.
right? But they don't understand it in that way. And I think it's worth sort of keeping in mind that there can be these really profound differences of understanding and just the way that you parse the world. And so it certainly, it plays a part that the understanding that other people have of just how information is a thing. So the Chinese look at information technology and the network and the information domain as just sort of like a thing that exists. And they look at networks as being the important part of that. And so for them, when you have more information, more networks, you have better efficiency and you're like more powerful. But the simple fact of having more information, more networks, more technology there makes you more vulnerable because it's they're directly related, like the proportionally related. The more you have, the more vulnerable you are. So for them, they just look at things that are network enabled and they think, okay, like this needs to be taken off the network so that it is no longer efficient for the enemy to have it. Like we need to, you know, disable that capacity because we understand that information is just a thing that's useful to have. They don't necessarily think of like, if we do a DDoS on this, we can, you know, enable our forces to do a, you know, whatever. Like that's not necessarily the framing that they have. So I think the structure that they've put together doesn't necessarily fit with the structures that we have.
Well, I was wondering if it was about what you think an organization is for. So the... I guess thinking about the US and Australian system, there's this division between domestic security and foreign intelligence. And part of that is about giving your foreign intelligence organizations more freedom because they're targeting foreigners. they're not taxpayers.
Right, they're not.
Part of that is also bringing like skills together. So we've both got SIGINT organizations, imagery or geoint type organizations, humint organizations, whereas the Russia-China paradigm seems to be you've got roles and responsibilities and then SIGINT or cyber is just a tool within those roles and responsibilities.
Yeah, just very briefly on the what are organizations for, I think it's worth pointing out how the structure even now of the Russian forces reflects what was created by Stalin fairly early on, where the idea was that you need to have a military intelligence, but because you're afraid of a coup or a threat from the military, you don't want their military intelligence to be too powerful. So you create another intelligence group, and you have them do counterintelligence. So you don't let the military do any counterintelligence, and you have this other group investigating the military intelligence all the time.
Right.
So then you only need, right, so that they can sort of try and balance each other out. And sort of, so that was the KGB and the GRU. And then when they were sort of restructured after the fall of communism or of the Soviet Union, and it became the SVR, the FSB, and the GRU, what happened was they took just the foreign intelligence part of the KGB and they separated it. And then they left everything else basically in place. So the very, very elite guys that got to travel overseas and make money by having foreign currency, they got their own little thing to play. And then everyone else was left keeping an eye on each other.
So that sounds to me like a deliberate kind of balancing. Is that yeah. what you're saying? That the whoever's in charge didn't want any one organization, and so there's kind of a duplication of functions to some extent right. within each organization to balance.
Yeah, so that they're, no one would get too powerful. So the classic joke about this is, like, why do KGB officers always travel in threes? It's one to write, one to read, and one to keep an eye on the two intellectuals.
Yeah, that's really interesting that the you've got this entirely domestic or entirely leadership concern that kind of shapes the organizations, which like totally makes sense,
right.
But it's It's sort of both historical and current. And
well, yeah, it's the things become path dependent, right? Like if you've cut, 100 years of that's how your organization is, you can't go like, well, we're no longer worried about that. Let's just restructure everything. That's not going to happen. So I'm kind of curious, like the Iranian cyber stuff is done by like the Republican Guard and the Ministry of Intelligence, like MOIS and the IRGC. And it makes me wonder if maybe that split that happens is similarly for internal reasons of, you don't want one agency or one organization getting too powerful. So you make sure that the responsibilities are split, or that the authorities are split between these two groups so that they can spend their energies fighting each other rather than plotting. I do know that there's rivalry and contention, like there's hack and leak operations between the Republican Guards and MOIS. Like that does happen. So I think that interesting, at least here, to keep in mind that much as we've seen that, NSA got cyber in part because of these internal bureaucratic moves, and not necessarily because NSA was the best place to have it, which that might be the case. I tend to think it is. But that wasn't the reason that they got it, right? And I think it's worth remembering that sometimes the structures we see are for historical path-dependent reasons that are just, that's the way it is now, because 80 years ago, someone was worried about these things and structured it in this way.
I was just thinking about Cyber Command, and the US at least has taken the step of quite significantly separating Cyber Command from NSA. So there's one employee who's in both organizations, which is the head, General Paul Nakasone. Australia has not separated the two. The UK is, I think, separating the two. They're getting a cyber mission force.
Oh, I've got thoughts on that. They're screwing things up royally, I think. So on the one hand, we've reached a level of maturity in cyber that it makes sense to have a dedicated cyber thing.
Cyber Command. Yeah. So just to be super clear, that's to deny, destroy, offensive cyber in the destructive phase, right? So why do you think it makes sense? At the beginning, we talked about how SIGINT is complementary to cyber. Surely cyber espionage is even more complementary with destructive cyber operations, right? It's just what you do.
Absolutely. The problem here is that there's a tension between the two of them, right? So if you're doing cyber espionage, your motivation is to maintain access for as long as you can. And so that means that any sort of action on target is against every fiber of your being, in a way, right? Like you're here to see what they're doing, not to reveal yourself. But if you sort of need to be an offensive cyber unit at some point, it's not a bad idea to actually have some sort of impact. And, obviously, that's not always the case. NSA, with Stuxnet, they clearly doing effects operations. But, I think that there's still, that tension hasn't gone away. Fundamentally, the drive of someone doing espionage is to not be noticed.
Yep.
And fundamentally, the drive of the military is to just accomplish mission. It's probably going to involve explosions and violence.
Yeah, destroying stuff. So I guess the question is, what's the best way to resolve that tension? And so you think separate organization. Mm-hmm. I'm actually pretty happy with Nakasone being the head of both, because you need someone to make a call. What's more important, intelligence or destruction?
Right. Yeah. So here's the thing is, I agree with that. I think that there does need to be a group whose ideas and everything are just focused on how can we change the world with cyber? What are things we can do? Like, is there information we need? Are there things that we can alter? Can we develop new capabilities and new things? Like, there needs to be people focused purely on that.
Right. So that's the offensive cyber bit, right?
Right. But they need to be almost a symbiotic relationship with the espionage side, because there's so much two sides of the same coin, right? And this, by the way, is where the UK is screwing things up so badly, because they're creating this sort of offensive cyber group, but they're doing it hundreds of miles away from Cheltenham and GCHQ. So all of the people who are good at cyber are being told, how would you like to move far away to the north, away from all your friends, family, and everything, you've put down roots here, and join up with a bunch of people in some weird thing that doesn't really have authority, doesn't have history, doesn't, we don't know where it's going to be at the table. We don't know what sort of career path you have, you know, change manager, or you could stay where you are, where you're happy.
Yeah, yeah. So I actually think that what you said about the need to have people focused on how to affect change, I think that's probably, you've convinced me there. I actually think that that it's all about that mindset, right? And if you're in an intelligence organization, you're just not going to get people thinking that way. And I think if you're going to have meaningful effects, you need to think cleverly about what you're doing, right?
Yes, and absolutely.
I think, like, I'm convinced there's ways to have significant effects. It's just they're probably not the sort of first cab off the rank ideas that everyone has.
I completely agree with you.
And I also agree that moving is it the Cyber Mission Force to wherever it is?
Yeah,
terrible idea.
Right. So, you know, in that case, that specific example, what would make sense to me would be setting up next to Cheltenham in commuting distance, right? So it's sort of you can do like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the donut with your friends, and then, you know, Thursday and Friday you go and you're assisting setting up a new team 10 miles the other way. And I think that would be a thing that could work. What they're doing is not going to work. That's my opinion. But yeah, like as we've been saying, I think the important thing is to have people whose focus is sort of how can we affect change using cyber? This is a new domain. There's new things we can do. It's constantly evolving and getting more deeply integrated into people's lives and stuff. So, you know, there's all sorts of like innovative stuff that has happened, right? So there was the, like in Russia, there was one of the hacks gained access to IP cameras. And then it used them, the ones that had speakers, it used them to play the Ukrainian national anthem on Ukraine's National Day, right? While taking, and then recording videos. So you've got all these people like just looking at the ceiling while this thing's playing, and you could see them, you know, like, what are we supposed to do with, right? So that's hilarious. And I'm not saying that NSA would never think of that. It's just, I think that they don't necessarily have someone whose job it is to think of like, what are things we could do? Like, what stuff that's available now?
Well, I think like NSA has got a lot of employees. It must have a whole ton of creative people who could think of ideas like that. But organizationally and culturally, they're not going to get rewarded. That's a pointless idea for our mission. Whereas at least in an organization that's the purpose is to do that, you can find those people, put them in a planning cell, I guess, and away you go. You can make use of them.
Right, exactly. So, what you were saying, 100%. Like, I don't believe that those people don't exist. I think that they're just in a structure that doesn't reward that sort of thinking. So, they're not necessarily going to do it.
Yep.
And that structure also, because it doesn't reward that thinking, it can't take advantage of that thinking. So, that's a limitation that, you know, that structure then imposes on the rest of the country by not rewarding that sort of thinking. When I think in cyber, having that sort of thinking going forward is going to be very valuable. You know?
Yeah. So I was wondering if you couldn't just have a separate structure in the same organization, like a different division. Mm-hmm. And I guess in effect, that's kind of what's happened. I mean, they've got different names, they've got different authorities, but they've got the same head. It's like a very strong separation, but still answering to the same person.
Right.
So we started off trying to answer the question of whether cyber espionage, cyber operations are a different discipline from SIGINT. And we've ended up answering the question that Cyber Command should definitely be separate from NSA. Thanks a lot, Guy.
Good talking to you. See you later, Tom.